This is from Matthew chapter 14, verses 13 to 21. And it's Jesus feeds the 5,000. When Jesus heard what had happened, he withdrew by boat privately to a solitary place. Hearing of this, the crowds followed him on foot from the towns. When Jesus landed and saw a large crowd, he had compassion on them and healed their sick. As evening approached, the disciples came to him and said, "This is a remote place, and it's already getting late. Send the crowds away so they can go to the villages and buy themselves some food." Jesus replied, "They do not need to go away. You give them something to eat." "We have here only 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish," they answered. "Bring them here to me," he said. And he directed the people to sit down on the grass. Taking the 5 loaves and the 2 fish and looking up to heaven, he gave thanks and broke the loaves. Then he gave them to the disciples, and the disciples gave them to the people. They all ate and were satisfied, and the disciples picked up 12 basketfuls of broken pieces that were left over. The number of those who ate was about 5,000 men, besides women and children.
Well done. Thank you, Esther. Thanks. For those of you who have a printed Bible, I invite you to stay near the verses because we will camp there a little bit today. I'm not sure if you're aware, but apart from the resurrection of Christ, this miracle is the only miracle recorded in all 4 Gospels. I don't know about you, but for me, when I understand things like that, sometimes it makes me think, oh, Holy Spirit, what would you have me learn? Why has each writer recorded this miracle? Keep that in the back of your mind as we move through this today. In verse 13, we started with, when Jesus heard what had happened, he withdrew by boat. Now, those who are reading on your phone, you might not have scrolled back up a bit, but for those who have a printed copy in front of you, what had just happened? John the Baptist, I heard the word, yes, so the cousin of Jesus, John the Baptist, had died. In fact, he had been beheaded, so it was quite an extreme death. So here's Jesus grieving for the loss of his cousin. In fact, he was grieving so much that he felt the need to draw away from the crowds and go and get some space. And yet what happened? The crowds followed him. Now, in your life today, grief might look different. Maybe you're not grieving over the loss of a cousin, but maybe you're grieving the loss of relationship, the loss of a job, yields that are less than you had planned for, quality of life that is less than you had hoped for. Grief can look different at different stages in life. And yet I want to encourage you today that Jesus, by his example, shows us in the midst of grief, we can still minister with compassion. Wow. And in fact, when we read this story, Jesus actually withdrew, then came to land, and then after this period, actually withdraws again to continue to process the grief of his cousin passing. And yet, he is still moved with compassion in the midst of this. In Matthew's version, it simply is expressed that he healed their sick. But in other versions, it actually talks about the fact that Jesus was teaching and healing. But were the disciples focused on what Jesus was doing? Nah, somebody shook their head there. I think we must be of the same opinion. Were the disciples coming alongside Jesus and sitting at his feet and listening to what he might teach next? Or celebrating the healings that were happening? No, what were they doing? Stressing. They were distracted by the large crowd. Now, to be fair, for the mothers that are in the room with me today, if I said to you tonight, dinner time, it's not going to be at 6 o'clock. I can see Tim getting worried down here. Dinner's going to be at 8. What are the boys doing, Tim?
Tearing the house down.
Okay, so for those who are parents in the room and those who have been parents in the past, we all remember that season. Mayhem. Dinner's delayed. Okay, for those who are teenagers with me today, we've coined a new term called hangry. When you get hungry, your emotions sort of come to the surface in a way that maybe is not normal. So we've got young kids tearing up the house and we've got teenagers who are hangry. Now, for others in the room who maybe your hair has changed colour, I'm not sure why, but when your blood sugar drops, what happens to your stability? Seriously. For those who are on in years, we would admit that low blood sugar, and I don't know why we stumble more. It just happens. So this is what the disciples are thinking. Oh my goodness, 5,000 men plus women and children, no food, no shop up the road. Oh boy. They're not focused on Jesus. They're focused on the problem at hand. In verse 15 we read, as the evening approached, the disciples came to him and they said, this is a remote place. I think Jesus might have known that. And it's already getting late. I think he knew that too. But what do the disciples do then? They're with Jesus and yet they say to Jesus himself, send the crowds away. They didn't come and say, Jesus, we've got 5,000 people to feed. What should we do? They actually came to Jesus and told him what to do. Today in Australian culture, we actually value what we call solution-focused people. Don't just come to me with the problem, but come to me with the solution as well. But when we're with Jesus, is that really what the Holy Spirit suggests to us to do? I would say we can see pretty clearly by Christ's response what he thought in that circumstance. They said, you send the crowds away so that they can go to the villages and buy themselves some food. But Jesus said, sorry, I'm looking for where it is. Jesus actually responds, you feed them. Could he have fed all of these people miraculously? Yes. And is that just a thought that you had just drop into your mind? No, there's precedent. In Exodus, for 40 years, manna from heaven came and fed people. So Jesus could have done it without the help of the disciples. It's possible. But did he choose to? No, he didn't. He chose to invite the disciples to be part of the solution. Jesus said in verse 16, they need not go away. You give them something to eat. Did the disciples have something to use to feed the crowd? I'm going to ask the guys in the front row here because they might have been reading. What did they have?
Five loaves
and two fish. Where did they come from? Oh, you must have read one of the other Gospels, I can tell, because Matthew doesn't tell us that, does he? But well done, because we read it in the other Gospels that it was a small boy's lunch. So in the room here today, can we agree we are not talking about whales? And we are not talking about loaves of bread the size of our church here today. How big would your lunch be? How big would your lunchbox be? Oh. About twice the size. Look at that. That's a good description. About twice the size of a tissue box. Okay, so we've got twice the size of a tissue box to feed 5,000 men and plus women and children. I have a question for you today. Do you think the disciples themselves were hungry? Yeah, we don't read that, but I would say understanding the circumstances surrounding them travelling by boat and ending up on shore, I think it's fair to assume that they were also hungry. I think that's important in this story. Because what did Jesus do with the lunch? He took the lunch from the little boy and he gave us an example in life. Even Christ himself took that lunch and he lifted it towards heaven and he gave thanks. Do we do that in our life with the provision that comes to us? Do we take it intentionally and give thanks? And then after Jesus did that, he actually divided it and gave it to the disciples to give to others. They themselves were hungry. Was there a risk that they could have eaten it themselves? If they had eaten what Christ gave them, we would never have seen the miracle. And yet it's understandable they were hungry. It is actually understandable that they would eat what Christ had given them to give to others themselves because they were hungry. But I thank God that they were obedient. Because they were obedient, we see this miraculous provision. We see a small boy's lunch, the size of approximately two tissue boxes, feed 5,000 men plus women and children. Did the disciples go hungry? They didn't. In the verse we read that they were all satisfied. That's very different to I've just had a mouthful. They were all satisfied. And then what happened? There were leftovers. And did they ignore the leftovers? Were they poor stewards of what God did in their life? Did they just go, oh, well, we're all fed now. Off we go home. No. As good stewards of the resource that Christ had put in their hands, what did they do? They went and gathered up how many baskets? 12 basketfuls of leftovers. A story that we are so familiar with. One that even some of the youngest people in the service with us today can recollect and remember. But my prayer today is that as we've looked at this passage together, that the Holy Spirit might have spoken new things into your heart. And I don't want you to think today that I'm standing here and sharing this message just because of the work of compassion. And while compassion's work is important, I want you to think about other areas in your life too, where Jesus is saying to you, you do it. When you're coming in prayer and you're asking him for breakthrough in people's lives or provision for your neighbour, is there a circumstance where Jesus would answer you? You do it. For me, one of the things that I'm a little bit poor in life is time. I don't know about other people in the room, but I always have a to-do list that seems to be a bit bigger than what I can achieve in a day. But I can testify to God's faithfulness. If the Holy Spirit says to me to pause and spend time with somebody, my brain wants to go, how many more things on the list? But when I am faithful and obedient to what he asks, I can stand here today and testify that he redeems time. A practical example of that was one day I needed to drive across town in Melbourne. And I remember getting to the appointment on the other side of town thinking, I actually don't know that I saw a red light. And I don't know how that is possible. except to stand here and testify that when we are obedient to what God asks of us, then expect the multiplication to come, for him to redeem. When he says to us, you do it, he didn't leave the disciples with no help. I don't see Jesus saying, you do it. I see him saying, you do it together with the Holy Spirit, in the power of the Holy Spirit. It's not a push you out there and you go off and do it. It's a collective, you do it, let's do it together. Maybe there's somebody in your street who is elderly and needs a friend. Or maybe there's a young mum who is desperately sleep deprived and just needs somebody to care practically. Could you hear Jesus to say today, say to you, you do it? Could you see the multiplication of blessing? Now, I started the message by saying, why was this written about in all four Gospels? There were 5,000 men plus women and children. How many people were impacted by this miracle? Lots. Thousands upon thousands. And I don't know about you, but when a miracle happens in my life, I tend to tell a few people. So if we've got potentially, you know, 10,000 plus people, all telling four or five more people, how many people were talking about this miracle? Lots. I think that's the reason why all of the gospel writers record it, because so many people were talking about the miracle. Today you heard me share about the miracle of 2.2 million children being supported through the work of compassion. Every one of those children has a family and a community who are also impacted by the generosity of that sponsor. It doesn't only help one child. We saw that in Alan's testimony. We saw that the support came to him, and yet his mother and his family were impacted by that gift. This is just one area that we can see multiplication. Provision come from the obedience of hearing Jesus say, you do it, and being obedient to what he's asking. If I could ask the worship team to come, please. After the service today, we will be in the foyer with the compassion table, but there are a number of profiles around the room that you've been praying for today. If you would like to sponsor one of those children, I would just ask that you pop past the desk and give us your details as you take the profile home. Sponsoring a child is easy, but I can tell you from my own life that it also transformed my life. The letters that I receive from my child encourage me in the same way that my actions encourage them. I thank you for the opportunity to share today. Be blessed.